So what makes a chip chippy? What makes a fry desirable? What is it that makes hot chips hot? Or science, it turns out, has the answers. And here to chat the chippy, Dr. Guy Lim. Now, he's a senior lecturer at Deakin University's Centre for Advanced Sensory Science. I said it well, Guy, didn't I? I got those S's out.
That was a pretty good job.
Thank you very much. All right, let's cut to the chase. A hot chip. What is it about a hot chip that we like best?
Well, it's quite universal, actually, what people like in a hot chip. It's not rocket science, probably, but it's the really crisp outer layer and the steamy hot inside. And that's often more difficult to get than you think.
We'll get to techniques a little later on, because I think it's important to give news you can use. But that thing of a crispy exterior, a soft interior in food is a very common sort of sign of desirability.
Yeah, that's right. It's actually funny. I was talking to my daughter, and we always talk about food because I love cooking. She loves cooking. Mm. And we're just making a list of all the foods that we desire and that we really, really like. And after probably 5 minutes, we came to the conclusion that, hey, Dad, it's always the same. It's always a crispy outer layer and the soft inside. And because of my work is all about sensory science and about what we like and what textures we like, looked into it, and it's actually quite universal. So when you think about this crispy outer layer, and when you think about natural foods like, you know, fruit and vegetables, when they're crunchy, they are right to eat.
Okay.
When they're soggy, it's too far. When they're hard, they're not ready. But when they're crunchy, they are the perfect time to eat.
So there's something there in very deep primitive human behavior that hardwires us to like these tastes, like that texture.
Yeah, I think that's true. And when you look across different cuisines, like a Peking duck, the crispy outside, right, and the soft inside. Not to say that we don't like slimy foods. There's certain slimy foods like oysters that people do like. But texture is this very interesting thing. Texture actually tells you a lot about the quality of a product.
Does this vary at all between sort of culinary traditions? Is this a universal human taste?
Technically, it's not a taste.
okay.
But that doesn't really matter. But, you know, the texture...
Give me a technical term. Correct my words.
texture is the correct term. So taste is more when we talk about sweet and sour, yep, and then salty and umami, and then you've got flavors and you have the smell of food, and all makes this sort of, you know, this concoction of what we experience. Texture is interesting because, first of all, we know a lot about the sense of touch, but we don't know a lot about how we sense texture in our mouth. We do know it's important. Mm. We do know that if you take all the textural cues out of food, it's very difficult to guess what that food is. We also use texture as a way of assessing whether the food is of good quality or not.
So where do we sense texture? Is it implied through the way something crunches against our teeth?
It's part of it. I mean, we have particular receptors in our mouth that can sense texture. Some of them do it on the surface. Some of them are sort of more deeper under the skin. Mm. But there's different ways we can assess texture. But what's interesting is that when we look at texture, when we look at how we eat, this becomes quite technical, but, you know, you have people really crunching on their food. They're really loud. Crunch, 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 crunch. You have people who are more sort of suckers. They're not suckers. They suck on their food.
Yeah.
And you have people who are more sort of moving that food around their mouth. And that sort of food behavior is also related to what they like. So just to give you an example, I'm a cruncher. I crunch on everything that I can see, right? I like that chocolate with that crunch. With the hazelnuts in there. That's what I really like, and I'm always after that really crunchy texture. You also have people that like to suck on things. Those are, in the Western cultures, the minority of people, just very few, probably about 10%, that are really suckers. They like to suck on everything, right? Takes them quite a long time to eat.
So in other cultures, suckers have higher numbers?
Yeah, in Asian culture in general, they're a little bit more suckers. And I mean that people who suck on food, right? Yep. So, and in the Western cultures, you're a little bit more crunchers and people who just chew on their food as well. So, the way we eat, we often don't think about it, right? Mm. We just, you know, you see a Peking duck or see something that's delicious, you just eat it and you enjoy it and you shoot. But as a scientist, we try to break that down.
Not allowed to do that.
We just break it down in little pieces. And that's actually very bad for your enjoyment, because when you break it up, you enjoy your food less. So I always have to be mindful when I'm eating. Don't think of work. Just enjoy your food.
Let's go to getting our chips crisp. I think you favour a particular method here to guarantee an appropriate outcome on the hot chip.
Absolutely. And I'm not going to take credit for it. It's absolutely Heston Blumenthal, the famous chef, who I like because he always thinks about what he does and he looks at the signs of it. Mm-hmm. He's not the only one who looked into the perfect chips, but he's the one who concocted this sort of recipe. And so the basic thing is that the enemy of crispiness is moisture, right? If you've got too much water in a product, it doesn't crisp up. So that's why you need to, if you eat Peking duck, you need to hang them to dry.
Right.
It needs to be really dry. The other important thing is the amount of starch in your chip. So what you need to do is you need to get that moisture out, but you need to do that in a controlled fashion. So step one, you cut your potatoes, put them in boiling water, boil them almost to the point that they get really crumbly and fall apart. If you take it a couple of seconds too far, you get basically potato soup, right? You drain them and you make sure that all the steam, you know, everything is evaporated, then you put them in the fridge. You don't have to cover them, just put them in the fridge for probably a couple of hours. That does two things. One, the boiling causes sort of almost like a gelatin type sort of surface on your chips. And the drying out makes sure that the moisture is gone. Then you take it out of your fridge and you get your frying pan. And this needs to be oil. So I've tried it with air frying and it doesn't work. So it's not the healthier or everything. But, you know, your oil, you probably want to get that to around 160 degrees. So don't ramp it up to 180, low temperature. And you fry your chip. So that's your second cooking, actually, after your boiling.
Yep.
You fry your chip for maybe 5 to 10 minutes, depends on how thick your chips is, etc. But it doesn't need to have a color. That's fine. After that time, you take it out, you put it on a tray, make sure it's cooled down, and you put it back in the fridge. And after that, you take it back, and then you ramp up your oil to 180 degrees or something, and you put your chips in there. And the chips that you get, it will take you about half a day to do it, but the chips that you get are really, really good. They're really crispy from the outside with a little bit of crunch and, you know, there's little nibbles that I like.
I'm wanting to do this already, and this explains to me entirely why the chips that I had at the footy a couple of weeks ago were, they did not spend half a day preparing them, clearly, because they were not to that standard.
And that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Like, we think of chips and we think, oh, yeah, that's a quick thing, right?
Yeah.
When you go to countries like Belgium, where arguably they invented the chips, you know, whether that's true or not, they certainly eat a lot of hot chips, as well as in the Netherlands. They've perfected the chips. You now have so many good places in those countries where you can buy really good quality chips and you don't have to make it yourself.
Do you put anything on yours?
Yeah, I'm Dutch, so I put mayonnaise. Loads of it.
Okay.
It's like drenched in mayonnaise. My kids are a bit of a mixture, so they have tomato sauce on it. My youngest was born here. The other two were born in the Netherlands, and they still are putting mayonnaise on their chips.
The thing we should avoid, probably, from a crispiness point of view, is vinegar, because that's just
interesting
pouring thing on liquid.
It is, and people from the UK tend to do that, and it is making it less crispy. So I wouldn't do it, but I can see why you would put vinegar on it from a taste point of view, because of the acidity and it breaks down the fat, and you know that makes sort of a good combination. But it depends on what you grew up with. There's a general agreement that crispy is good, but there's no general agreement what sort of topping you need to put on your chip.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is indeed fascinating, and you've heard it there, how to spend an entire half day making your chips. But you will be grateful. You will be grateful for that effort. Dr. Guy Lim, he's a senior lecturer at Deakin University Centre for Advanced Sensory Science, home of the perfect chip. This is Blueprint on RN.